I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Tetsuro Shigematsu joins me again. He was last on in 2015, just before the world premiere of his show, Empire of the Sun. The show sold out its entire run, as did a 2016 remount. He's even taken the show to Singapore recently. The show got great notices, and a new production is set to begin the 8th through the 17th of November at the Gateway Theatre's Studio B. It is an autobiographical one-man show that tells the tale of his emotionally distant father and how that bond extends beyond a lifetime into his son. Akira Shigematsu had a distinguished radio career with the BBC World Service. It's perhaps no wonder this might have influenced Tetsuro, who went into broadcasting himself. For 2 years near the end of his father's life, Tetsuro interviewed his father. It was a way of understanding one another and a way for them to connect. Portions of those interviews are in the show that I'll get Tetsuro to tell us about now. It's directed by Richard Wolff. Tetsuro Shigematsu is a playwright, actor, scholar, broadcaster, author, filmmaker, and theater artist. He once wrote for This Hour Has 22 Minutes and was the host of The Roundup on CBC Radio. His recent theater work, One Hour Photo, earned 5 Jesse nominations. The website for tickets and information is at gatewaytheater.com. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Tetsuro Shigematsu. Mr. Shigematsu, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Joe. Good to be back.
Thanks for joining us. So when we talked about 2015, just as the show was to begin its premiere run, your father had just died. Is that right?
That's right. My father died 2 weeks prior to the show opening.
And so what was... We all know how successful that run was, and subsequent runs. I mean, they were sold out. The notices were very good. But at the same time, you're doing a show. You're performing night after night. What was the process of grief like when you're with him, essentially, so close after his death?
Well, I think a lot of people felt sorry for me during the initial run, because my father had just died, and it was a show about him, and the show ended up being about his death as well, because we changed the show in order to reflect what had really happened. But in fact, for me, it was a good way to grieve. I think had I not had the distraction of the world premiere of the show and all those other pressures, I would have been rather out of sorts. There was conflict with my siblings and with my family, and just being able to put all of that into the show and into the performance was actually a very good form of sort of therapy for me, I suppose, for a lack of a better word.
And so you've been able to perform this now numerous times since then. Are you a different person, perhaps?
Yeah, you know, one of the things... That was of concern to me when we were invited to do, after the first run sold out, we were invited to remount the show the following year. Uh-huh. And one of my concerns was, well, if I'm a year out from when my father died, will I be able to get there emotionally? Because I never went to theater school. I'm not a trained actor. And I thought, the further back my father's death is in my rearview mirror, the less I'll be able to get there emotionally. But I found that, in fact, the opposite is true. When I looked at an archival tape in order to just, it's the kind of video that it allows me to refresh my memory about where I move on stage, I noticed that when I looked at myself on video, I was in fact quite clenched physically, because we'd only locked the script maybe 2 days before the actual opening of the preview, and I had lots of lines to memorize, and there's a lot of manipulation of miniatures and the live camera, and I'm not the best multitasker. So I realized during the initial premiere run, I was barely holding it together. But a year later, and with subsequent runs, the text is really now in my body in a way that I no longer have to think about any of those things. And unexpectedly, the show, performing the show, becomes a highly emotional experience for me, because I performed it well over 100 times now. I find that when I open my mouth to speak, I honestly don't know what I'm about to say until I take in a breath, and then these words come out of my mouth as if I'm thinking of them for the very first time. And when I'm in that performance space, the emotions end up hitting me like a rogue wave in the ocean, and it's often surprising to me how much I end up feeling.
And so we're talking a couple of weeks before the run is about to begin there at the Gateway. What are these days like before a show starts? I mean, what sort of work are you doing? I mean, you mentioned a moment ago that you performed it over 100 times. One would assume, a layman who's not in the theater, would assume that there's not that much work to do. But there is, isn't there?
Yeah, well, one thing that I do have to get to work on is losing a bit of weight. My director decided that towards the end I would actually take off my clothes at the end of the show in order to get into my funeral clothes to sort of mark that passage of time. And so for that initial run, when we started the show, I thought I would only do it for a 1-2 week run, and so I really got into shape. But now that I've been performing the show, we've done our upcoming tour. The run of the Gateway kicks off our third national tour. I'll have performed this show in 4 countries, 18 cities, to close to 20,000 people. I actually have to make sure that I don't gain too much weight all year round. So these days I'm exercising, I'm eating well, but I'm also clearing my schedule of other things because I find that the biggest amount of work to do Empire of the Sun is the emotional labor involved. And so what I have to do is become a little bit like a clear glass of water. So I'll see less people, I'll take less meetings, and I'll almost begin to lead a kind of monastic existence because I feel that when people come to see Empire of the Sun, they are expecting, or what they deserve, is a certain level of emotional honesty. And I find that the only way to get there is by being the emotional equivalent of a kind of blank piece of paper. And in order to erase all those other aspects from my life, that is the work. It's kind of the discipline of doing nothing, if that sounds kind of paradoxical.
Yeah. So what then is it like to relive the emotions that you do night after night during this run, and I'm assuming subsequent performances after this?
You know, a lot of veteran actors tell me, Tetsuro, I could never do what you do. You get out there on stage by yourself, and you have to hold on to the audience's attention for the length of a movie. And if you forget your lines, you have no scene partner, you're all alone out there, I could never do that. And for me, I never think of it that way. When I'm standing in the wings backstage, it's not the prospect of being alone on stage that gives me pause. It's the prospect of maybe not being alone. And specifically, I'm talking about feeling the presence of my father. Now, Joe, I'm not a religious person, but a friend once told me at the beginning when I was doing this show, I'm curious to hear about how your relationship with your father will change now that he's died. And even though I don't think I'll ever see my father again, when I'm on stage and I'm reciting his words, because sometimes I'm taking his actual journal entries or I listen to his voice, from a clip from his radio show, I really feel that I can feel his spirit very powerfully. So either when I'm playing him or having a dialogue with him, there are particular nights where I feel like it's less a theater show and more like a seance. And so in those moments, I feel that this is much more than a piece of theater. It's much more than a piece of performance art, but it is a kind of, and I hesitate to use this word because I'm not religious, but it is a kind of communion. And I think that's why audiences respond so powerfully to it.
And so whether it changes how you feel about him, is there any feeling derived on your part as to how he might have felt about you? I mean, does that change it all, say?
That's a really great point, Joe, because people don't know this, but I actually performed a kind of prequel to Empire of the Sun called Rising Sun back in the 90s in Montreal when I was much younger. And when my father caught wind of, I hear that I'm playing him on stage, my mother took me aside and said, oh, by the way, when people ask Dad about you, Dad says, my son makes fun of my accent for a living. And I asked my mom, wow, what does that mean exactly? Because I know Dad has a kind of a dark sense of humor, or does he really mind? Mm-hmm. And my mom said, I'm not sure. And the translation for that as a Japanese-Canadian is you have to stop and you have to stop now. And so I did stop for 20 years. So when I decided to do this show again, because my father's health began to falter, I decided it's now or never if I'm going to tell my father's story. When I asked his permission, I was very shocked for him to give, when he gave me his assent. And I asked him, well, Dad, why is it okay now, but it wasn't okay 20 years ago? And he said, well, if you tell my story, then my life will have had some meaning. And so when I'm on stage and I'm performing my father, knowing that I have his blessing allows me to channel him with abandon. Otherwise, I think I would be playing this show with a sense of guilt because I'm sort of stealing his stories, because there really are his stories. When I interviewed my father for the show, I learned that he was there when Marilyn Monroe sang Happy Birthday to JFK. He was, as a young boy, he stood in the ashes of Hiroshima. All these incredible stories, his life so closely followed the contours of the 20th century. It was a really big surprise to me when I did these finals interviews. But now knowing that I have his permission to share these stories with the rest of the world means that when I look up at the theater lights, I always see the same constellation of lighting instruments, but it's easy for me to imagine that he's looking down on me, and for once, he's not judging me.
What did he know of what the show was going to be in those couple of years, say, that you were talking to him, doing these interviews, recording them?
Well, when I said to him, he was blind from diabetes, type 2 diabetes, Parkinson's, what have you. And at one point, after 2 years of interviewing him, February 14th, 2015, I asked him, Dad, haven't you wondered why I've been interviewing you all this time? He said, no. And I said, well, I have a confession to make. I would like to share your stories with the world. And he just involuntarily shook his head. He had that sort of body language that blind people have. It's very transparent. And he said, I cannot imagine why anyone would have the slightest interest in the banalities of my life. It was as if I said, hey, Dad, can I take these toenail clippings and sell them on eBay for medicinal purposes?
Yeah.
He just had no idea why anyone would see even the slightest value. And then I said to my father, well, Dad, I have a confession to make. I've actually shared a couple of your stories already, and I realized I didn't ask your permission, but let me assure you that people find your stories, your memories, your life experience riveting, and so do I. And so my father never got to see the show because he died 2 weeks before opening, as I mentioned.
Uh-huh.
But he did have a sense that I would be talking about not only his childhood, but his own relationship with his own father. So this story is in fact about four generations of Shigematsu: my grandfather, my father, myself, and my own children, and the things that we inherit from our forebears.
Now, the other thing I noticed as I was preparing for our chat today, Tatura, was that since we talked, you did another show, 1 Hour Photo. Is there a relationship between that show and Empire of the Sun?
Yeah, very much so. 1 Hour Photo is kind of a companion piece to Empire of the Sun. It's about my friend's father. Once again, I'm speaking with another older Japanese man, and in both cases, one is my father, one becomes sort of my father figure, and I tell his story. And both these men, same generation, both of Japanese descent, but completely different. Mass's story as a Japanese-Canadian was about his experience of being interned, incarcerated during World War II as a Japanese-Canadian, and how his family, and along with the rest of his community, lost everything, and then how he tried to rebuild his life after that incredible setback and that injustice. And so, yeah, those two, in a sense, are, to my mind, pieces that are sort of linked. And I actually do I briefly touch upon how I began telling 1 Hour Photo, I began investigating that story just as my father was dying. So it was almost as if when my conversations with my father came to an end when he died, I began a new set of conversations, kind of like Mondays with Mori,
yeah.
but with another man named Mas Yamamoto.
And so because you've taken the time to speak to this older generation, at the same time, you know, you're performing on stage with it. You've gone on the radio with some of this audio that you've recorded. Beyond that, though, do you look at what you're doing as a service? Say, I mean, your father told you that you're giving his life meaning. Does that motivate you to do the work that you're doing, the sort of work that you're doing, say?
To be honest, Joe, no. For me, I guess I'm a big fan of stories. I love listening to podcasts. I read a ton of books. And I just love, as a theater goer, as a reader, I just love a great story. And sometimes, as one who loves stories, periodically I'll encounter a story that I want to see out there in the world. And so for me, when I heard my father's story, when I heard Massa's story, I thought, that's a piece of theater I would love to experience. And the only way I can bring that about is by creating it. So I always approach these works not out of any sense of civic duty or this would be a noble thing to do, like, you know, sitting down with my parents. Like, all that, while I think is probably a good idea, that motivation would bore me. I come to these projects purely as a fanboy and wanting to have audiences be able to experience the kind of stories that I want to experience, which are deeply emotional, that are about family, and are about cultures and communities that we don't get to hear a lot about, from marginalized people especially, because I think the more people whose stories get told from other communities, the more interesting our culture becomes.
And so you found it, I guess, heartening as well that because people have taken to these works as well as they have. I mean, that's got to be encouraging, isn't it, for the sort of the theater that we're to expect in the years to come? I mean, people want to see this stuff, right?
Yeah, it's very encouraging as an artist, because the fact of the matter is, if Empire of the Sun didn't get those good reviews, if it didn't sell out its first two runs, and it looks like it's on track to sell out its third run at the Gateway Theater in Richmond come November, then I wouldn't be able to do my subsequent shows, for example, 1 Hour Photo, or my next show, Suicide Forest. And that's what makes theater so interesting to me as an art form, because it's not just an art form, but it's also a business. People think I'm able to do Empire of the Sun all around the world because it's got nominated for awards or it has all these great critical reviews. But the reality is it's much more business-like than that. Because a lot of people want to see the show and people buy a lot of tickets, that is the only reason I'm able to do the show again and again. Because at the end of the day, cultural decision-makers and gatekeepers really have to look at the bottom line. And if they know that my show will sell out houses, put bums in seats, if there's an actual public appetite for this particular story, then that is the only reason I get to keep doing it again and again. And hopefully I'll be able to continue to sell lots of tickets, because I would love to keep on telling these stories.
See, I was wondering, after that first run, the world premiere, I'm assuming that a lot of, say, your family got to see the show. What did they make of it? What did they think of it? Because, I mean, invariably, this is someone that they knew as well. But it's not their story as much as it is yours, right?
Yeah, that's it's the one conundrum I keep running into is you cannot tell your own story without telling the story of others. I remember there's one particular moment in the show whereby I am reenacting a moment of physical intimacy with my father. One of the themes of the show is how, as men, we are constrained by traditions of masculinity from expressing our affection or touching each other. And at one point in the show, I'm actually in bed with my father, spooning him and giving him a back massage because it's the only way to calm him down from his Parkinson's seizures. And at one point, I begin reenacting something that is so cringeworthy, so uncomfortable, where I'm spooning my father and his hips, because he has Parkinson's, begin to thrust into my, his buttocks begin to thrust into my groin, and I'm reenacting this moment on stage, and it's both very uncomfortable, but it's also very funny for the audience, because at this point, they've been through the emotional ringer, they're laughing, they're crying, and so I'm performing this slightly obscene sort of reenactment on stage, and I look down, I remember during the opening run, I see my mother. She's 3 feet away from me in the front row, and she's looking up at me, and her mouth is open from shock. And that moment was so unexpected for me. I actually left my body, and I was continuing the monologue. But I remember thinking, looking at my mother, looking at me doing this obscene little movement on stage with my hips thrusting, and this little charade. And I remember thinking, thank God I never asked my mother. I never thought about my mother when I was writing this show. Because had I thought about my mother, then I would have fallen into the Asian son's filial duty compulsion to create a show that would honor my father. And I think the result would have been hagiography, or really sentimental portrait that would have been boring for everyone. I never did ask my mother what she thought of the show, but I remember overhearing her described to a friend maybe a year later that Empire of the Sun was more beautiful than I could have ever imagined. And that was vindicating for me. But again, had I set out to create a show where the goal was for my mom to find it to be more beautiful than she could have imagined, I would have had like lots of pastel pink and flowers and lots of poetry and a really kind of reductive idea of what is beautiful. But instead, I focused on creating an honest portrait of a complicated man who had a lot of flaws, but also had some good qualities as well. A well-rounded portrait of a human being. And so in that respect, you know, I remember when my sisters came to see the show, I mean, actually a workshop preview, and my sisters are so honest with me. They're just brutal. They've given me, my twin sister's given me two compliments in my life. So that gives me an idea of my relationship with my siblings. And after they saw the workshop reading, they had this sort of, they all surrounded me, my three sisters, and they said, well, we have some good news and some bad news. The good news is we like it. You really got it right. Everything you said was true, and you're telling it as we remembered. So good job. The bad news is no one else will like this show. I mean, why would they? This is all about our family. You have all these inside jokes. We care about Dad, but no one else is going to care about this story. So you've hit a dead end. You should just wrap things up here because you're headed for a fall. And at that moment, I thought, I don't know if that's true. And I decided to go ahead with it. And thankfully, it turns out they were wrong. So and they're usually right about things. So I was happy that turned out the way it did.
Are you hearing from audience members about just how effective this show is for them?
That is probably the most surprising aspect. Every performance, I come out and meet the audience in the lobby afterwards. I understand a lot of actors don't do that. But the stories that I hear either directly from people or even through the grapevine, for example, a member of my company told me that her best friend has now made it a habit that when she goes and visits her mother, she's going to make a point of touching her. And even though this is not part of the culture of their family, she just realizes that from having watched my play, that's just something she needs to start doing. I have other people who tell me, you know, as soon as I leave this theater, I'm going to go home and I'm going to call my dad for the first time in years. So I have all sorts of people who tell me that watching this show inspires them with a kind of mid-year, New Year's resolution to talk to their parents, to interview their parents, to reconnect with their mother, their father, someone in their family whom they haven't spoken to in a long time. The Vancouver theater critic Colin Thomas wrote in his blog, "I'm sending all the people I love most to Empire of the Sun." And I think it's because when you see my show and you see the distance between a father and a son who speak different languages, who come from completely different cultures. My father was basically kind of a samurai reincarnated. Uh-huh. And myself, I'm just this spoiled kid who grew up in Surrey, who was too busy riding his skateboard and drinking Slurpees to really ever take the time. And so given the distance that we traverse over a lifetime from this incredible cultural, linguistic, generational gap and all these misunderstandings and the acrimonious, violent nature between myself and my father, I think what the audiences see that, wow, if those two can actually make a connection, even however brief, you know, after many decades, maybe, just maybe, there might be hope for me.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Suicide Forest. Is that the next project?
That's right. That will, I'm really not supposed to talk about it, but
sure.
Just for you, Joe, that will be in 2019 at one of the best theaters in Vancouver, which I'm not allowed to say just yet. But yeah, that's my next show, and that will be kind of a departure for me, no longer a solo work, but that will be an ensemble piece, and it takes place in Japan.
Uh-huh.
And it explores Suicide Forest, the place, which is the most popular destination in the world to kill yourself, and also the phenomenon of hikikomori, which is these people in Japan who go into their room and they don't leave for years or even decades at a time.
Well, we'll await that. But in the meantime, for people like myself who didn't see the show the first time around and the subsequent run, I mean, this is a marvelous chance for us to get down to the Gateway and see Empire of the Sun. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you again. I, as I say in your business, break a leg. I appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Joe. You know, I always say you're my favorite interviewer to talk to. And if I may, I just want more motivation to come. Our show is going across the country and around the world, but this third time is the very last time it'll ever play in the Lower Mainland. So this is our last chance. This is your listener's last chance to see the show. Otherwise, it'll be very expensive for them to chase us around the world.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah.
Visit gatewaytheater.com. Empire of the Sun is at the Gateway. The 8th through the 17th of November, Tetsuro Shigematsu joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.